And we're in. We're recording.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
So, so this is what's left.
What's left of what's left.
It is. It's the Porta studio for what's left at Steve's apartment because his good radio had technical problems this week, but we're still doing the show. We're still doing the podcast. And today is April 25th, 2009. Day after Armenian Genocide Day in Los Angeles, well, all around the world, but definitely celebrated between, like, Vine and Vermont and...
And parts of Glendale.
Yeah, and large parts of Glendale, exactly. So, and Obama, you know, still calls it sort of a genocide now that he's president. I remember him being sort of attacked for... It's a sore spot with Turkey to be called on the Armenian genocide. And during the campaign, he had called it genocide, and he sort of stood by his... Sort of stood by it still, now that he's president. So, Steve.
And let's talk about that. I mean, 100 days, voila.
I know. We're basically at his 100 days. I know from the political side, I've read that the White House has embraced this. And...
has embraced
the hallmark of 100 days.
Yes.
And as a media event. And they are working with basically, God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. They're working
the
behind
end of
the
head cold. Thank you.
Yes. It was a tough
it's
week for Steve.
Cold.
I know the White House, like a political operation, is working the, God bless you one more time.
Go for it, man. Just keep talking. I'm with you. I'm listening.
The basics of it are they're working the cable news networks with buzzwords, catchphrases, stuff that they feel would most likely be parroted by because CNN will have a dedicated 100 day coverage, MSNBC
right.
will. I'm not necessarily sure Fox
will, and it'll be critical.
Of course.
Well, they're not disagreeing with everything that he's doing. I mean, I was interested in their reaction to what was the guy? Shep Smith, particularly, freaked out about torture.
Did he?
Yeah, he went berserk, actually, on the air and swore. And said that, you know, that in America, we don't torture, end of story. And there's no, you know, you can quibble and play these games. You know, it's interesting. He's one of these righties that's actually starting to reject the sort of soft focus relationship to the truth that the Bush regime had.
Yeah.
You know, it's either torture or it isn't. You know,
right.
you can start soft pedaling, and you know, and all this crap that people have been saying about, well, you know, releasing the tapes releasing the evidence and the photos may make us less safe. It can be used as propaganda for terrorists. They don't need any more excuses. They already have photos of torture that we've done.
Right.
We have evidence, more than evidence. We have footage. We have had trials. We've had suicides. We've had all sorts of things around these things. More of it is just going to reinforce what's already known. You know, this is not something that's going to be exacerbated by us revealing the truth. If anything, I think it's going to be a way for us to do what we've been saying we wanted to do, which was to take a moral high ground. I think Americans are having a hard time with the idea of torture as part of our arsenal, if
right.
you will.
Right.
You know.
I it's funny. I listened to a bunch of left-right debates this week mm-hmm. on the radio regarding the torture memos. And the right wing is there are some people who just say, look, this is what you do. We're big boys, big countries do big bad things. That's what goes on. And there are others that were condemning it on the release of the torture memos on false grounds. And the possible...
False grounds being...
Well, they were saying...
that his motivation is actually political and not actually...
These might be actually legal. Tortures might actually be legal. There should be no cases brought against the attorneys that recommended this, that wrote these legal positions. It reminded me of something that was said on last week's show with Chris, which said his take on it was very idealistic but true in a certain sense. It's like telling us that the Nuremberg trials don't count. Because
well, I don't think it was that idealistic. I think that actually he made a good point, which is right. that, you know, if criminal activities have occurred, they have occurred.
Right.
And, you know, there are limits to what's allowed in a war. There's still the concept of wartime atrocities. We know that we felt the Nazis were an extraordinarily extreme example of that. But why should, you know, and who can, and everyone's saying this, or some are saying that, oh, the evidence we've gotten is reliable. It has been helpful. I don't know that I believe that.
Right.
I don't know that I believe that at all.
Well, Cheney, this is my
Others have the exact opposite position.
Well,
and Cheney should not even be involved in the debate. He's ridiculously out of line right now.
What I find amazing about Dick Cheney right now is that they've drawn him out of his undisclosed location more since he left power.
Yes.
We've seen more of Dick Cheney in the last 100 days than we did during, you know, possibly the last year or two of the Bush administration. But what is interesting is, and this is the part where I get a little cynical, and I'm unsure if the White House... what's the point of releasing the torture memos is what's going through my head. And part of it is there's a huge political dividend in that it brings out Dick Cheney and the right-wing hawks that were wrong on Iraq and had ulterior motives that weren't expressed for going into Iraq. It brings them out, much to the detriment of the minority party.
Right.
But is it really, is there a higher purpose to this? Is Obama trying to say, hey, I'm cleaning house. The United States
well, I mean,
is
that
cleaning
is my,
house.
That is, isn't that what we're being told?
I guess. I mean, I've never heard someone from the White House state that that's the reason why they're releasing the torture memos.
I don't know. I think that was something he talked about during his campaign. He wanted to sort of open the windows and clear the air and you know, sort of just get us moving forward by dealing with what we've done.
Which is what Bill Clinton did to a certain extent with some things that the government had sat on for 20 or 30 years. He released stuff early on in his presidency about how minority soldiers were used as test subjects. And there was a couple other things that he released that had been inside government locked up for
and people years. Yeah, because, and they were true that these things had been done. And I, you know, for me, I think that, you know, there's a really strange tendency in this country, which is to sit on the truth about what it's done to get what it's wanted, whether it's the inability to digest, you know, as we talked about last week, to digest the genocide that it took to make the way for the United States to actually occur,
right,
and the slavery that it took to fuel it for 500 years. And if not slavery, then de facto slavery up until World War II. And then, of course, you know, immigrant labor was maybe one step away from that as
yeah,
well.
It was.
So at least except those people weren't stripped of their entire culture and language. But
yeah, they were allowed to maintain it in
their
poverty-stricken neighborhood.
Yes. So, you know, that was a step forward, I suppose. But, you know, what I'm getting at is that, you know, we talk about the way things happen in the world. You know, for whatever reason, we have decided as a country to swallow a lot of mythology about ourselves. And on a certain level, it works. We're always striving towards the betterment of ourselves, always striving towards some sort of moral high ground, some sort of ethical high ground, whether it's religious or not. There is a sort of set of ideals that push us forward. And because we return to those, we kind of have to live by them. And they're almost impossibly high, but they work. So in my opinion, if we do not admit fault, if we do not admit misdoing or miscalculation or wrongdoing, then we cannot advance.
And I guess that's what this is going to be, which is what my hope was. Is the first step in what is to come is for Obama. I'm assuming the signals are larger than the home audience by signaling to the world. The first thing is he's releasing these torture memos. There's no other way to discredit the past than to pretty much, like you said, admit it or display.
And then distance yourself from it. I mean, it set a very high bar. We're never going to be able to do this again, or at least
When he gets caught doing
it. If he gets caught doing it, and if he does it.
There are people out there like Chris and Amy Goodman who have their eye on him, and they believe that Bagram Air Force Base is where this stuff is going
I heard him say that last week.
But
it remains to be seen. I mean, that's their opinion. We'll see.
If someone sneaks out some digital photos taken with a point-and-shoot camera, then the house of cards come crumbling down. I'm assuming that...
Not necessarily. I think that, again, you know, it depends on whether these things... Unless you've got a clear chain of command going back to him, then... Plausible deniability. And then, you know, a lot of things happen under presidents that the presidencies that the presidents don't know about.
Right. And I think that to a certain extent, I guess that's what's going on. What he's trying to do is illustrate to the world, here's some actions that speak louder, that speak volumes, and then I will follow it up with some more.
Right.
My big fear for him is that in his outreach to the Muslim world, for lack of a better word, Israel's got a leader that's going to do something, is going to force us to defend some to stand by, not condemn some horrible action. Benjamin Netanyahu will provoke an us or them scenario that will discredit everything that the Obama administration, all the inroads the Obama administration is trying to do to find moderates and to try and defuse the bomb that is the hatred towards us.
Oh, God. I know we have a difficult ally in Israel, or a weird difficult ally. It's a difficult ally to support because we have, on the moral issue, you know, and the historical issue, absolutely every reason to do it. But many of the actions there are not necessarily things that are going to help us at all.
But there are people who could argue that Israel had taken extreme measures in the past over time. They had gotten more extreme. But I felt that in the last 8 years, it was taken to the extreme of the extreme. And I believe that the incursion into Gaza was done in the last days of the Bush administration because they knew that they wouldn't have a welcome hand in the new administration.
No, they knew if there was going to be something extreme, they'd have to do it.
They'd have to do it there. Yeah. They have to get it out there. But I do think that Benjamin Netanyahu is not about a two-state solution. I think that the key, if you want democracy to flourish in the Middle East, in Muslim or whatever, I hate to say Muslim because there are Arabs, everything. But basically, if you want to send a signal to the non-Israeli nations of the Middle East, it all runs through Palestine having a functioning state.
And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think it's kind of extraordinary that it's taken this long.
Well,
and that there's so much resistance.
There are things that George W. Bush said that were radical and almost left in their nature. He is the actual – Bill Clinton never actually said two-state solution.
Right.
George W. Bush was the first person to say two states. And I know he was saying it just to say it. But it's out there.
But when someone in that position speaks, we both know that it's more than just a notion. It has power. It gains momentum, and it's not coming from nowhere.
Well, it was politically expedient for him, but the power behind it was not. It was still there. It was still there.
Yeah, and I mean, words spoken from a leader have different meanings.
By the way, that was a big gift to Obama. It was a big gift to whoever wanted to try to tackle. The Israeli-Palestinian situation is that a Republican hawk said there should be a two-state solution and gave nominal lip service to it in the last 15 months of his presidency.
Well, that's when he was trying to become a statesman and clean up the bloody mess that he left behind.
But that being said, if you take it from the torture memos to that, we can do all this stuff, but there's a chance that now that Netanyahu could screw it all up. From what I understand, in what seems to be the emerging governing style of the Obama administration, the envoys and Hillary are working Benjamin Netanyahu behind closed doors in back channels to let them know that the United States expects a certain, you know, all he has to do is start up a settlement that will piss off the Palestinians and Hamas. But overall, from what I understand, the whole notion of the soft power of the United States is being pressed very heavily in the back channels, which I think is something that Chris had written. For anyone who's listening this week who didn't listen last week, Chris Burnett of KPFK and a bunch of other really, whether you agree with them or not, really excellent sources of information, independent sources of information was on. And he had written an open letter. And one of his first things was, I fear the U.S. will we go back to sophisticated Clinton-style soft power? And Chris may fear that, but I'm seeing it. It's not just, by the way, and I don't want to get onto the subject right now, but it's not just with back channels to Israel and Iran and Iraq and China and Russia, which I think is going on constantly right now, But it's the things where the heads of the credit card companies are called up to the White House, and the extremely strong soft power of the presidency is being laid out for them, just as it was for the bankers before them.
I love the fact that they left without saying a word in complete grim silence. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that they needed to be called out on that crap, and that's what I'm talking about. When you simply expose an issue on that level, it starts to have repercussions. These people have been able to get away with murder. They can raise your rates with absolutely no reason. Right. They can change the structure so that they can fine you for everything. I've had bank accounts where, you know, that have been whittled away by fees because they didn't put, you know.
Yes.
There are ways for these people to legally take what amounts to billions of dollars on a yearly basis from people, usually the people who can least afford it.
Yes.
And it is unfair because there is no other system in place that can replace it. So they needed to be called out on it. And once this thing is, now that this issue is on the table, the public itself will now be emboldened to tell them to fuck themselves. Mm-hmm. Excuse my language, but honestly, we've had enough. And I'm glad he's doing those things.
I know. And honestly, to get to his style of leadership, this is something that I'd never in my lifetime heard of. Mm. I'd never heard of a president exerting influence without legislation. It was all do or die on legislation.
Yeah.
It was all do or die. And he's calling these guys in, these heads of industry in, and saying, this is what I expect from you. And right. We're the fucking United States. We're the government of the United States.
But this
we
is
can make this really difficult
right.
on all of you.
But and this is what I love about this presidency, is that he's learned how to use the power very, very quickly.
Right.
Not just by, you know, legislation, but just by being the president himself.
And it frees, by the way, his party in Congress
right.
from having to grapple with, you know, Biden's from Delaware. Most credit card companies are based out of Delaware because of the lax rules.
Yes.
The rules. And Biden exactly. defended that Bush era responsibility in borrowing, not responsibility in lending credit card, restructuring the bankruptcy laws to put credit cards higher up on the list. Biden was for it. Because they were all from his home state.
Right, right, right.
This gets Obama, also his party, out of having to fracture over a contentious issue. He's going straight to the guys
yeah.
who run the companies.
I love it.
By the way, they were men. They were described as a room full of men.
Well, I hate to say it, but imagine.
Every now and then when I say, well, the men or the guys, I always feel like I must be overlooking some female. But from what
you're
understand.
Not, actually.
The people who came up there
I think a lot of women would probably tell you that there are still boundaries and ceilings
oh, sure.
that have yet to be
sure.
crossed or shattered.
Hey, man, one of my favorite lines from the election of 2008 was there are 17 million cracks in that glass ceiling.
Right.
Hillary freaking Clinton. And the speech that if she had given it her whole fucking campaign might be president right now, but that's another story.
Well, it's a matter for the history books now. McCain's concession speech, which was a great return to form if he'd maintained what he yes. really pretended to be. But he actually is an angry little bitch right now. So I'm keeping my violin away.
Can we just go straight into the Republicans for a minute?
Please.
We did a very serious show that wasn't about any of the headlines of the week. Last week we did a great discussion about bigger, grander schemes, bigger views of the United States.
Right.
It's up there with the Damaris Miller one. There were shows that weren't necessarily about what had happened in a 7-day period. But as a consequence, we missed the Republican Party for 7 days. And the tea parties.
Oh my God. The tea bagging
parties.
The tea bagging parties. Yeah. Call it what it is. It's tea bagging.
That's,
for those of you who don't know what it is, ask your mother.
If those of you don't know what it is, go find the Colbert Report. Go to Comedy Central and find when he described the might of the people rising up over its government and dipping down or something like that. It was so funny. The Republican Party is a mess. It's to be expected, and maybe it's a game of why. I remember Bush used to lose the spring. He conceded. Rove would concede the political issues every spring, knowing that the summer was political dead zone, and come out swinging in the fall. The famous line is, why would you release a product, speaking about the Iraq war, in the springtime? You would do it in the fall. Like, so maybe they're following the same playbook, but the tea parties were horrible.
Yeah.
The Tea Parties.
Well, first of all, they were up in arms about the quote unquote raising of taxes, which is actually not even happening.
Yes.
They're actually
not yet.
Not yet. But right now they're being lowered for most people. And the only people who are being taxed more are 5% of the population whose taxes are going up 3%.
Right.
So what the fuck is this all about?
Oh, it's my nonsense. My favorite part is it caused so much. There was all this press coverage of the press coverage, which was great.
Well, but we're living in that era right now, which is, you know, these people are chasing their tails to the point where they don't even understand that there's something else going on outside of that little circle.
Exactly. But, I mean, the Fox, as a Fox News, as a entity, has taken such a big hit. I am so surprised that the news, the cable news network that has grown and dominated is fumbling the ball on the Obama administration. This is a time for Republicans.
Because they don't actually have any real anything real to work with. That's their problem.
Yeah, I guess. For me, this is the time when Republicans should go back to the Ronald Reagan message, which is very hard to dispel in the hearts of American minds.
But they've evolved beyond that. I didn't mean to cut you off, but go ahead and finish
that. No, you're right. They can't get back to it.
They can't get back to it.
But that's the party to get back. It's either that or Rockefeller mid-70s Republicans. There's no in between. They keep going so far to the right, and they keep appeasing their base. But their base is only 40, at best, 40-something percent. In an election. And it's really not. It's really like 36-37%.
Yeah.
The tea parties look bad. It enabled the whole CNN crew called them teabag parties. Teabagging.
Yeah.
Anderson Cooper had the giddiest time with that. then Comedy Central, when they covered it, was having a blast with it. And actually probably did the best coverage. They sent the British quasi correspondent to New Jersey, and these people just sounded ugly. They sounded ugly. They called Obama fascist. Said we're heading into fascism.
Do they know what fascism really is?
Especially since we just escaped fascism under Bush. I remember someone saying the single greatest threat from 9/11 wasn't the attack. It was the fact that the nation could fall for fascism. And Bush ran right down the sideline.
He was doing. I mean, in the earlier days, the first 2 years after 9/11 were a nightmare.
Yeah.
In terms of curbing of civil liberties, curbing of the freedom of speech, it was ridiculous.
Right.
That.
But, you know,
what was that absurd press secretary's name?
Ari Fleischer. Guy's worth his weight in gold.
Warning people to watch what they say at times like
this. Yes.
You know, Bill Maher knows. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know.
Yes, true.
People got taught very swiftly.
Yes.
That, you know, their opinions were not allowed. Period.
As Chris mentioned, if you really actually created a power base, you would find out very quickly how they would come at you. They would come at you in ways you wouldn't even know.
Well, I mean, we see it already. I mean, it's not even that we don't know. I think it's a lot more frightening than that. It's pretty out in the open in a way.
Yeah, it's true.
My thing about this is like, I believe that there are massive forces always at work, always at play, but I don't think they're very hidden.
No.
I think it's pretty clear.
Anymore.
When you go up against certain things, some people, things happen.
Right.
But and,
just to get back to the, well, not just the Republicans, because they're, well, their whole mess, the party being a whole mess. There was one really kind of amazing statistic that came out of that week, which is Eric Cantor, who is supposed to be the heir of the Gingrich
Jr.
Yeah, the Gingrich playbook. Who I didn't know he would be the guy they put out front and center on this. You know, when they went into minority, but he either fought his way to it or is, you know, the chosen.
He's
one.
He's anointed. Yes, I think it's more of an anointing.
He has raised $1 million. He has raised more than anyone in the House of Representatives. Anyone, including Speaker Pelosi. In a chamber where everyone, including Speaker Pelosi, has to be reelected every 2 years,
right.
Very significant to me that $1 million was given to him.
They're banking on this kid.
And that's what
we've had our eye on him for a while.
I spoke to Katrina a bit last week, and she's from D.C., you know, from Virginia. Her family is involved in politics. And she said that Virginia specifically is supporting him. There, you know, that the party and him, you know, there's a lot of support. There's a lot of anti-Obama in Virginia. So, but I did find it just, it was just a little, those are sort of the, it's too early to tell tea leaves, but it's worth noting.
It's worth noting. You've got to keep your eye on all the horses right now.
It's also worth noting that Obama's down in Colorado, and so is the senator, the Democratic senator from Colorado. Colorado, he won in 2008. I don't think he necessarily needs it with the number of electoral votes he had, but it's a sign that that state is done with their anti-Bushism, and
for now,
yeah,
we shall see. I mean, obviously, you know, the election, the next election, we know started the day,
the day after the last one.
But at the same time, I mean, things, as I keep reminding myself and everyone else, we've got to let things unfold.
That's true. That's 100% true.
This whole 100-day notion, I mean, it's so interesting. I mean, it, you know, it comes from FDR's era. And we keep going back and forth with these comparisons. I think that, you know, I've finally settled on him being an FDR-type president.
I'm coming down on FDR's side, too.
You know, the sort of president activist, I think that's the closest model we have to that.
He's also very much... I think LBJ was sort of like, how do I say this? Nuts and bolts in the streets, war on poverty, win the war in Vietnam.
Right.
And FDR was find a way to fulfill the promise.
And by the way,
we need
another war on poverty here.
Oh, I know.
I mean, this is the United States. Again, you know, let's go back to the dirty secrets. The dirty secret of continuing American poverty is insane.
I know. I know, but the part that is Obama's more of a we need to take this moment to transform the nation to flourish for the next 50 years.
Yeah,
I mean, that's definitely where he's coming from.
I think that's right.
But that being said, some of his policies are very great society, and some of them I think are a disaster down the road. The thing I find interesting is he keeps mutating a lot of his policies. You know, he passed the stimulus bill, but then, you know, called all the mayors in and said, don't start building tennis courts with this.
But I think that makes sense. I mean, you know, he wants to make sure that we don't have the sort of scandalous misappropriation that we are accustomed to.
With billions of dollars being spent usually.
Because, I mean, you know, everybody fiddling around on the sidelines, doing what they want to do with their pet projects or enriching themselves and their cronies, right. You know, that adds up.
Right, right. But that being said, you know, it's too early to tell. I just, the one thing that I find interesting for 2000, right now my eyes are on 2010, are that Eric Cantor raised the most amount of money and Colorado swinging back to become a blue or a red.
Yeah, we shall see. We shall see. Let's note those things and carry on.
There we go. So what else you got going on?
I don't know. What else is exciting and crazy? Let's see. I don't know.
We have the benefit of having our computers here. There's
okay,
a
look up some things then.
There's one that's
Hillary Iraq announcing that the recent spate of bombings is a sign that the situation is improving. I found that really hard to understand.
The thing that's scaring me is that Iraq is turning back, and it seems like the headlines right now are that Iraq is destabilizing again.
You know, I mean, I think much ado has been made about the stabilization in general. I think it's a really, this is going to be very, very tricky.
Well, I don't have any actual proof, but from what I understood is that Baghdad sprung back to life. It sprung back to having a certain amount of commerce, a certain amount of ability
commerce,
to
even
go
nightlife.
Fair, like you're able to go to your farmers markets, outdoor markets, that sort of thing. And what seems to be happening now is the exact type of strategic bombings that inflame, you know, retaliation are what seems to be going on, like a systematic destabilization. And I believe during this last week, we had the first redeployment, if that's not correctly used, but we pulled troops from Iraq and sent them straight to Afghanistan. And
yeah.
I know that the spin on this is going to be Obama destabilized Iraq by winding down our presence there. I know that.
Well, there's that. And then also Iran, a lot of the people who were killed in this recent attack were mostly from Iran, predominantly Shiite.
Right.
And the supreme leader, their Ayatollah, said that the main suspects in this crime and crimes similar to that are American security and military forces.
Of course.
Which is, you know,
of course,
it's a convenient way for him to, you know.
Well, you know, my big fear was that Iraq had to have like a 50-year military presence because by the U.S. because it would just devolve.
Right.
If you left any sooner.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think this thing is great that he's trying to keep this campaign promise. I just don't know how realistic it is.
Right.
Because if the situation implodes, whose responsibility is it? It's ours. We created the situation.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go back.
I've always thought they might do a two bites of the apple thing with Iraq, which is the first try didn't work and we had no allies. But if we see Iraq spiraling downward, we may be able to build up a coalition for real, like the first, like Bush 41 did. Bush 41's first coalition was pretty well populated,
right,
by other countries. And it was pretty well funded. I'm pretty sure he got the Japanese to fund the majority of that war. So
that might not be so possible now. But
no, it's not.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a chance that I've always thought that they may go, let it devolve to a certain percentage and then rally the troops, not with a Bush, it's my way or the highway, but everybody.
The situation is dire and we address
it. We have to act.
I think that's going to be the situation. That's what I fear.
I fear it too, because the sectarian violence is spiking again. It seems it's by design. And
what we're really looking at is that it's the fragment, all those lines, those fragmentary lines of all these different types of people who are drawn into a country by the British,
right?
You know, all that stuff just keeps reemerging. Saddam Hussein was able to keep them all in check because he was extremely forceful and murderous,
right?
You know, that's probably the only way that this is going to work.
Well, that was the only other thing I always thought, which is they'll find a strong man to put in place. And he'll rule with an iron fist.
Well, who is that?
I don't know.
I mean, we don't know who's in that country right now. I mean,
the one thing about the Bush administration was that they were so supposedly dedicated to free elections that it would be very difficult at this point in time, after the images of the purple thumbs, to appoint.
It would be, because it's a strong, because we're always pro democratic. That was the only reason we were there, doing all this and killing hundreds.
Right,
of thousands
we were doing
of people.
It for democracy and for freeing women.
Freeing women,
I believe, were the real reasons why we went into Iraq. But they used WMD because the public wouldn't buy such a liberal argument for going to an unelected or totally elective war.
Not even go there again. I'm not going to start.
I don't want to start that. Did you hear? This one was pretty tricky. Did you hear Jane Harman was wiretapped?
No.
It's awesome. This is awesome. This one, I was very surprised it doesn't have legs yet. First of all, if the Republicans are the party of disarray and teabags, then the Democrats are the party of nearing the tipping point as being perceived as corrupt, which is amazing, as some of their corruption it was when they were in the minority. And John Murtha and 105 Democrats, I think, no, John Murtha and 90-something Democrats and 5 Republicans will soon be entangled in a mess where they are responsible for, there'll be an ugly coincidence of them passing defense expenditures from companies that they received, for companies that, from which they received campaign donations. That's on the horizon. It's coming sooner or later. I think the reason why it's not out there now is because the Republicans have nothing to lose other than to use it. It's best used in 2010. But I've read about it a couple of times on Political Wire, and it's out there.
Amazing, just amazing to me. Wiretapped by whom and for what?
Jane Harman was speaking to someone in Israel, who the NSA was tracking, and she basically said that she was going, it was like a quid pro quo, in which she said something like, I will push for a leniency for this for you if you know I forgot, but it was basically she was saying that she was going to help out. I think someone who was caught by the U.S. like an Israeli spy or something like that, and the NSA that catches
us. That sounds a little inappropriate.
The NSA catches us. This is my favorite part. And Alberto Gonzalez intervenes on her behalf because she was going to go light on the warrantless wiretapping that the Bush administration. She was gonna go take it easy on them. And her response to this being dug up is, look, we've already been through all this and I've been cleared. And everyone's like, no, it was Alberto Gonzalez intervening and telling them to stand down.
Wow.
Like it's a world of hurt. My favorite part.
It's a mess.
My favorite part about it though is it shows you what. Oh, and the best part is at the end of the conversation, she says this conversation never happened. They have it recorded where she says this conversation never took place.
She's the chair of Homeland Security, chair of the Homeland Security Subcommittee on Intelligence and Terrorism Risk Assessment. Mm-hmm. This is not appropriate behavior, Jane. Yeah.
And they said that's the reason why. Everyone was wondering why she didn't get pulled into the administration. She's a safe seat. She's from California. We could easily elect someone in her district.
She's too dirty.
And they knew that she was too dirty.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing.
It's funny. I mean, it's terrible. It's not funny.
Well, it is funny. We have to go ahead and step back and look at these people as comedians for because, I mean, they're in these positions and they just lose fucking their moral compasses always. What's up with that?
Yeah.
I don't care what the party is. You know, whatever. Just recognize the things that you say you mean to stand for and actually live by the rules. Or, yes, suffer the consequences. I don't give a damn whether she's a Democrat or a Republican. She needs to be punished.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's not. She probably won't.
You know, someone will make hay from this at some point. Here we go.
I actually have. I'm going to tell you exactly what
she's really, saying. Honestly, you know, we're sitting here. I mean, if I were a Republican, it would be so easy to launch an attack right now, given the jokes have been going on from the beginning. All these people that haven't paid their taxes. I mean, dudes. Yes.
I know.
Right. Get the checkbook out if you want to get the appointment. Just clear it up.
That's the drip, drip, drip on the tipping point.
Yeah.
Where the Democrats all of a sudden look like a corrupt party. A party that's been impotent for years, decades, at least since 1994 as a party. We had Bill Clinton.
Yes.
And then we had Tom Daschle as a majority leader.
And, you know, people see Bill Clinton as corrupt.
Well, Bill Clinton was corrupt.
Well, okay.
But the thing I liked about Bill Clinton was he was a good deal maker. If he was corrupt, it was usually for there was something that we would get out of it. We, us, the party, something. This is the actual, just because my computer is up. This is from Glenn Greenwald on Salon.com. Was overheard on an NSA wiretap telling a suspected Israeli agent that she would lobby the Justice Department to reduce espionage-related charges against two officials of the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, the most powerful pro-Israeli organization in Washington, which, by the way, gets into the whole mess with Israel. I am not anti-Semitic. I believe in Israel's right to exist. I believe that Israel is under constant threat from its neighbors, if we should call them neighbors, its neighboring countries. But I also believe that Israel has figured out how to work the levers of power in Washington, and it's very difficult, extremely difficult, to do anything that might. You can't cut back on the subsidies we send them. You can't tell them no more settlements. You can't, if they don't want a two-state solution. By the way, this week, I think we as a nation said that we're okay with Hamas being in the government in Palestine.
Right.
Which is the only way, by the way, folks, is the only way that you can have peace between the two is if the militants are involved. The whole notion that you don't talk to the militants in Palestine because they're terrorists and we don't talk to terrorists is stupid. The only people who can make the peace are the militants, just like the only people who could make when they came perilously close to solving this all in 1994, and they assassinated the leader of Israel, a former general.
I can't remember his name.
Remember his name?
Yes, I can't. It was terrible.
What was his name? Wasn't Perez? Wasn't Itzhak? Was it Itzhak Rabin? Whatever. The case being, he was a general who had fought in the wars. who is responsible for military victories for Israel. The only person who could possibly made a deal that would work for Israel and Palestine was the general. And the only person or people who can make the deal is Hamas. And the whole notion that we're going to exclude them from the process is what hindered the Bush administration's...
It's not realistic. It's not realistic.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's Yitzhak Rabin. That's who it was. And I'm saying it incorrectly, but... And he was assassinated.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
But he was... And I remember all the analysts saying at the time, the only one who's going to make this deal is he... He was a general. He was a decorated general that everyone knew. So, anyway. I don't know if you saw, by the way, getting back to the torture memos, I don't know if you saw, but CNN did this, it's horrible. You know that, like, you don't have enough budget for it, computer animation? They did one of these where they showed what waterboarding is.
Oh.
It was like, it's for such a terrible thing, I'm really not laughing about it in as much as it was the funniest thing to watch. It was, and by the way, waterboarding's not just pouring water on someone's face while they have a towel on it.
No.
They're upside down.
They're upside down. Their
it's
heads are
pouring
underwater.
Into their face. Yeah. It's pouring into their, yeah. It's bad. It's fucking bad.
The Israelis stopped using waterboarding quite some time.
Did they really?
Yes, they did.
This is the thing. You know this shit goes on. It has to. And you know that there has to be a place where all good nations send their people to be tortured. There has to be some backwater hellhole in some country that no one...
You know,
France
what
has to send some people
there. What'll happen is that it'll just go underground.
Yeah,
it'll
more.
It'll be done in a way where the CIA decides that it has to happen, and they'll put distance between the White House and themselves, and it'll happen anyway.
Right.
And they'll justify it in a different manner.
There was a discussion. I think Glenn Greenwald was...
Because, I mean, this it's not unprecedented. These things have happened. I mean... In various presidencies where the CIA has been acting completely separately from what the White House said it knew.
Right. But there are also, there's getting back to that plausible deniability. It was Glenn Greenwald who I was listening to on Thursday night, right before we all met up. And he said a lot of times what happens is there's a directive from the White House, but it's top secret. CIA gets the directive and then does the stuff that the White House doesn't know they're going to do to achieve that directive.
Right. The goal is achieved.
And the goal is achieved. And the White House can say, we didn't know about that.
Right.
So it could be general.
Isn't that a time-tested formula?
Yeah. It could be general. It could be very specific.
Right.
That, I think, if we're talking about...
Speaking of... I'm sorry. I'm jumping around, but we didn't talk about David Kellerman from Freddie Mac.
Killing himself.
Supposedly killing himself. I don't know that he killed himself. It's been suspected as a suicide.
Well, yeah, that's what they said. Yeah.
Do you think
the Obama administration killed
him? No. I think that disgruntled, formerly wealthy people killed him.
Maybe.
Everybody on the East Coast winds up hung. You know. No, it's true. Well, that Washington madam who quote unquote committed suicide.
Oh yeah, she killed herself.
And one of her prostitutes. She didn't kill herself. She was hung. She was even in the press saying weeks earlier, if I wind up dead, you will know that it's not a suicide. And this was after one of her girls had been hung. I'm sorry, hung herself.
Right.
There just seems to be a trend towards, disgruntled folks handling their business that way because you just garrot them and hang them up.
There's one French guy who supposedly killed himself over Bernie Madoff.
Madoff, yeah.
Shot himself in his office.
Yeah. I mean,
that gets into the, what was that quote? The long shadow of business. The government, yeah. It gets into, again, not to bring it back to Chris's interview, but it does bring it back to that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, you know, we're living in times that are no different from, you know, the past in many ways. I mean, the people's motivations are the same. Great fortunes being lost. Great anger.
Yeah.
And great anger has wrath, and wrath can take many forms.
It's true. And honestly, I mean...
And who the hell knows who did this, but, you know, I don't believe it was a suicide, but he had no real reason to kill himself.
What was the guy, Foster, who supposedly shot himself?
Oh, yes. Well, that's a whole other story. We won't even. Let's not get into the Clinton death list.
I mean, I'm just saying, it's like a.
There's so many people in that world that, you know.
It's a hallmark of a Democratic presidency that someone kills himself early on.
There were so many people that wound up either, quote unquote, committing suicide, many with gunshots to the back of the head. One was a pregnant woman. I can't remember her name. There were just so many crazy things that happened in that. Under that regime, I couldn't believe it. People that were on their way to testify against a bill that were hit by hit and run cars. I could actually read the list on the air. It's shocking because all of them are, they're documented deaths, all real people
that somehow
all mysterious.
Were auspicious for the Clintons.
Yes, all useful in many ways.
That is brilliant. If we can go on to the economy, I think what happened this week was the settling down of the euphoria over Tim Geithner. What I saw was a settling down of the euphoria over the economic policies set in place and a return to the laws of gravity. And the euphoria being Tim Geithner finally came out with a plan that didn't shock the shit out of Wall Street. Wall Street said, all right, we can rally on this. Then the stress tests come and due. They're out. The stress tests, those banks that know that they don't pass the stress tests have been alerted yesterday as of Friday. But the point being is when Geithner finally managed not to flub something, the market buoyed for a few weeks. Obama went overseas. The nation felt a certain amount of optimism. He comes back and you've got not just the suicide of the guy who ran Freddie or Fannie, I forgot which one. You've got the stress tests are coming due and the data for the next quarter comes out and it doesn't look that good. Durable goods are down.
Right.
Real estate's down. People are predicting that the big hotspots, most of Florida, Los Angeles, Nevada and New York are still going to drop 10-20% over the next year, which is great as long as I don't lose my job. But
I mean, you know, again, we're talking about the deleveraging part of that's probably realistic and it probably needs to happen in some strange
way. We came back down to earth. I mean, Obama's approval rating started to touch the high 60s.
Right.
And I would expect that.
Well, Reagan at the same time at 83, which is freakish.
Well, Ronald Reagan was a phenomena.
Yeah.
And he played it off as a phenomena. Remember, they were as a style contingent to Reagan.
That's true.
Reagan wasn't just a guy. It was the end of bell bottoms. It was the end of shaggy haircuts. It was the re-embracing of preppy chic. I mean, there is a whole... And the preppy, somehow it was cool to be a prepster and do coke. I mean, there was a whole cultural wave that swept through with Reagan that made him a bigger phenomenon. Obama's style is not like that. Obama's not, there was no Nancy Reagan red on Obama's, you know. They came out so shockingly plaid and turtlenecked.
Right.
That, you know,
oh my God.
And people are like, oh, I can do that too.
I can do that too. I can embrace making money and the system.
Mm-hmm.
It was the end of the 60s/70s or whatever the hell we were living through at that time.
70s heavily influenced by the late 60s.
Yeah.
The 70s really, I mean, it had its identity points.
Well, the 68 to 78 period is a whole world unto itself.
Yes. Yes. But you know, you had the Clash and you had things that were out there doing its own thing. But ultimately there was a big sort of 70s/60s connection.
Yeah.
And then you had Reagan come through and say pastels and big hair and shoulder pads and plaid and
the world was ready.
And the world was ready to eat it up.
They're Americans. They forgot how much they liked money.
Yes. And the Reagans denied doom and gloom. They denied that we could ever run out of oil. They denied that we needed to conserve. There was a regressivism to their message that was really, you know, there was an appetite for in the United States.
And they were old enough to be able to get away with that set of beliefs. The Republicans who are still clinging to that set of beliefs, and they are.
Yeah.
Still denying global warming, still denying that there are environmental issues. Someone described them as the party of the 19th century in that department. And they kind of are. you know, unfortunately, we're not living in an era where you can deny things anymore.
Right.
You know? And
I'll be honest with you.
And, I, you know, as much as we'd like to survive into the future, we're going to have to take steps.
I get the feeling that the people inside the Obama administration are planning for the not cutting, how do I say this, not saving ourselves. I think that they are planning for the post meltdown. I think that they are figuring out, all right, we can't stop global warming. It's going to run its 100, 200, however long year course. So
I think that we could. I mean, you know, I think that we need to, we are the country that needs to take the steps. We in China and probably India are the ones that need to deal with things as quickly as possible.
Especially China, who puts a coal, was it like every month or every so many weeks they put a new coal plant online?
Yeah, it's crazy.
But I'm kind of think that there's the brightest minds are going for, all right, you know, there'll be new flood control techniques. There'll be, population migration. The only thing that could save Michigan is the fact that people can't live in certain parts of the country.
Right.
And there'll be all these empty homes and towns waiting for people to move back to them.
Away from the coastline where we thrive.
Exactly. Exactly.
Where the soil will be leached with salt water.
But getting... it's true. That's what they're planning. I mean, I figure L.A. for building a desalinization plant.
What's that?
I figure Los Angeles will build a desalination plant.
I think that we
plant.
Need to. I think it's kind of overdue. It's strange that we aren't doing that now.
I don't know why they're not. Well, I guess because we have such an easy time polluting the water that we would desalinate that we don't want to actually.
We do,
start
but
it.
I mean, we've got to start thinking forward now. There's also there's people. Are you listening? There's a way for you to make money.
Saving the planet.
Saving the planet.
I know. Well, that's
you can go for the gold and go for the green at the same time.
That's the upside of capitalism.
Go green and make the gold.
That's the upside of capitalism that's not been discussed in all the condemnations of American-style capitalism is.
Well, we talked about that last week. We said that in response to Chris that I felt that the environment would be saved by the best and brightest business minds.
Right.
It's just that we always tend to have to be pushed to the point where it's like, oh shit, if I don't do something about it, we'll perish. But if I do something about it, I can also make a fortune.
It goes back to the Prius, right? The Prius came out of a Clinton initiative where they gave all this money to the big three to develop a hybrid. Mm-hmm. And at that cutting ceremony or whatever, that signing ceremony, the Japanese, Toyota especially, were like, we can't be beat. So they came up with the Prius and didn't realize that there was a market for it. And they got to the point where in 2003 and 2004, they couldn't keep them on the lots. They couldn't manufacture them fast enough. But that's capitalism, right? Now capitalism goes, there's money in them, they're hybrids.
Right.
So they need to come to that on some other things. I mean, I'll be honest with you, if solar panels weren't $3,000 a panel, I would put them up on top of my apartment.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think when you're a homeowner, it's a different story. You make that investment and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's that.
But like most people are saying,
make that lump sum payment and you're
then
free.
Reap the rewards down the road. Yeah.
But that's something where you'd want to be in the house for 10 years or something. But
yeah, no, you know you're going to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you're living through, you know, a winter, let's say you have a house with two or three children in it and your heating bill is $300 a month in the middle of December or right. January or February or March or even April in some parts of the country.
Right.
That adds up quickly.
Yeah.
If you've been able to, you know, save power for the sunny months. I mean, during the sunny months, and then, you know, mm-hmm. work that out. That's a good thing.
Well, you can do that. Sell it to the grid thing.
That would be great.
Which is awesome.
So I think that's going to happen. I mean, you know, if we just get to a point where every new building had solar panels and they were, you know, required.
Antonio, by the way, is resurrecting his narrowly defeated proposition to put solar panels on rooftops of, I think, more than just government buildings.
That'd be great if Antonio ever did anything. You're talking about Villaraigosa.
Yes, our governor.
Yeah, it'd be nice if he did anything. I'm still waiting for the potholes to be filled, and I don't seem to see them, any of them filled in this whole city. And I cover a lot of territory here.
I know.
What has he done?
He did launch a pothole initiative. I don't know where they've been fixed.
I remember that, but I don't see any of them filled.
The one thing I can say is that I've been through nicer areas of town, and they're not filled there, too.
That's what I was just going to say. Not that, going through Hancock Park, going through blah, 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 it's the same as going through Hollywood.
Yeah. So in the old days, I used to, when I first moved here, I used to know I was in a nice neighborhood by the quality.
The smoothness of the road. Not anymore.
No, they're all
I'm trying to figure out where all this, the money from all the tickets that we all get and all the meters that are on every right. godforsaken corner. Where's that money going?
I think the city's in a ditch, money-wise. Yeah. It's just going to money, to things they can't afford already.
Right.
Speaking of that, I would like to. We're at 54 minutes. I would like to take a moment to mention this. There was a discussion because of the teabag party of is $250,000 a year rich?
In my opinion, no.
Okay. In my opinion, when the statistical average is 40 grand, yes. In my opinion, when Los Angeles County statistical average is like 48,000, then even in Los Angeles County, five times the average is rich. It is rich. It is rich. I don't care if two people have to earn it. It is rich. And I listen to these people speak on Marketplace and on Which Way LA and on NPR. And it was the debate. Is $250,000 rich? And I'll grant you, it's not rich. But it's not 40 grand a year.
No. I mean, I don't know how families live on 40 grand a year.
Right?
I don't know.
Now, I did a little check in my head, and I said almost every two-income family that I know, that it's even when it's someone's part-time and someone's, whatever, they probably get to about 80 in Los Angeles at a minimum. Someone makes 60, someone makes 50, someone makes 30, right. Something like that. And that gets you by. That gets you going. So I was like, I will grant that $250,000 in from downtown to Santa Monica in Los Angeles is not rich, but as my anecdotal proof is that when I guess all my two income family friends who have kids, they probably are still close to 100 grand, between 60 and 100 grand with combined income, but it's. I got this from my college roommate. $250,000 is nothing in New York City. Hey, you know what you tell poor people? Go to where you can afford it. If 250 grand isn't that much in New York City, then you're in the wrong city, honey. You got to move.
Well, this is the thing. This is the creepy thing. Like, you can make those fat salaries in those cities, but you can't really function in them in a way that makes you feel like you're rich.
Like you're making that
money.
Not
to mention the fact that, let's be honest, you're also working 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Practically.
Well, yeah, of course.
You know.
If you're making 250 grand a year at a job, you're probably a workaholic or a really lucky salesman.
Or you work for Freddie Mac, but you might commit suicide or be murdered. I'm not sure which one it is.
That's true. That's true. And by the way, I think the top White House aides get about 100, and they work 7
They're
days
public servants.
A week.
They're public servants. Oh, I work 7 days a week, too.
I know. I just thought about Rahm Emanuel. He's got a family.
Yeah.
The first guy who hears about a national security problem is not the president of the United States. Yeah, it's the chief of staff.
Yeah. That's true.
And that's at little Billy's birthday party.
You know, we're living in the wired age. So, I mean, and that's one of the reasons why Obama's, I think, kind of the perfect president for this time frame, because he's so much a product of this era.
Yeah.
In a way that, Bush was not. Bush nor his regime were, or even the Republicans are not, for some odd reason.
Right.
They seem very out of step with the times we live in. We live in, instant information, constant contact, twittering.
Yeah.
It's the perfect iteration of the time we're in right now.
I know. We don't tweet.
I
don't tweet.
Tweet, baby. I might start. I don't know.
All right. So we are at 50, almost 59 minutes. We got one more minute left. There will be, you told me about it. Is Gingrich and Gore actually going to debate?
No, they did.
They did.
The whole thing was on Friday.
I have to find that.
Competing testimonies.
Oh, before a committee.
Yeah, and that was where the whole 19th century concept came from, because they just are so vastly separated by their take on reality.
I need to see this.
And it just, you can find it in the Daily Beast today.
There you go. I'm going to check it out. The picture is unfortunate, but the photo I'm looking at of Al Gore, he's just an unattractive person.
Well, he's a stiff guy with a stick in his...
But, like, at any moment, his facial, like, if you snap a photo of him, at any moment in time, he can be completely unappealing.
Yeah,
And unfortunately, that's what rules politics to a certain extent.
Barack Obama and Congress are closing in on a law that finally sets a price on carbon dioxide emissions and begins to ratchet them down. Meanwhile, the GOP faces a make-or-break moment in its rueful history with climate change, and at least so far, continues to act as the party of the 19th century.
I think Obama's idea is that if business interests can come in line with environmental interests, there's no way that 19th century thinking can take root.
No, because this is a 21st century concept, which is that, you know, being responsible can actually help. Because one of the things that's always irritated me about big business in this country is that they've always had the anti-environmental stance. They've always characterized people who cared about the environment as sort of tree-hugging maniacs, when in reality, we all survive on the same planet, and we need for the planet to survive, for us to survive.
Right.
And there's something, you know, you can take that hard-line sort of reductive stance and make people sound like lunatics, but ultimately, this is our home. And you cannot befoul the house you live in any more than you can befoul the planet you live on. That's just a fact. Right. And people need to start marrying that thinking to their business practices, and it will be harmonious. It will be.
Right. Well, I've seen this nation fall for, there was a lot of regressivism. There are old shows I could find somewhere where we were talking about the regressive.
The last 8 years were regressive.
Exactly. Of the Bush administration. Yeah. And, if you look at the failed one-termers, they didn't offer a regressive option. Jimmy Carter did not. He wasn't associated with the solutions, which I think was his problem. And neither was Bush 41. Bush 41 was not a regressive. He didn't offer the tantalizing, lip smacking treats of don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, because we'd kind of played that hand, and it was
he
time.
Came in,
and the other shoe had dropped, and it kind of wasn't really possible to keep that delusion going.
Nope. And he paid the price. The one thing that the Democratic, what appears to be, at least Clinton, the two-termer, and Obama at this moment, if I could, in a Richter scale, Obama's a two-term president this week. But Clinton offered optimism. He offered savory, it will be okay if we just work at it, which is not regressivism, but it's almost as tasty.
Right.
So we just have to play by the rules. And this will all work out.
But now we're resetting the rules, and I think that's the difficulty. I think people are resistant to change in general. I think that they feel like if it's worked for such a long time, it can continue to work. Right. That's how we've gotten into trouble. Detroit doesn't work. Detroit hasn't worked for a long time.
I know.
It's been rotten since the frickin' 60s.
I know.
So come on. Wake up. Let's start now sort of just, if you do something that isn't working for you at for a certain amount of time, you start to look like an insane person.
Right.
It's like, this isn't working. Move on. Figure it out.
They didn't work it right in Detroit. This isn't working. They didn't work it right to the bitter end.
Yeah.
By the way, I heard yesterday, it's not official yet, that one of my favorite General Motors marks is going to be discontinued very quickly, and that is the Pontiac brand.
Oh.
The GTO.
That's sad.
The Trans Am.
Yeah.
The Grand Prix.
But see, there was a moment.
The Bonneville.
When you guys were doing your work, we loved it. But you stopped. What happened to you?
And right now, they have a car on the market it's not good for the environment, I'm not going to lie, but it's a great car. It's their new four-door. It's got a nice, chunky V8 in it. It's faster than hell. It's got this great, it's just awesome across the board.
Driven those, but the steering is really shite.
The steering's always, the Germans have the best steering. Yeah. Everyone knows that. The Japanese can't figure out the German steering.
Yeah, all those great things aside, the steering is really primitive.
I agree with you, but the thing about it is it's a monumental leap forward for their product line. It could compete with, it's a poor man's, burner, fast car. And it's too little, too late. And they're going to discontinue Pontiac. And they're probably going to discontinue Saturn, which was the car that I actually bought back in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
When it was really dorky to own a Saturn, by the way. It was super dork because I had to drive a Saturn in 1994. But anyway, and Fiat and Chrysler seemed to be
coming to terms.
Yeah.
But you know,
by the way, I'm excited to see Fiats back in this country. As much as it's sad to see whatever happens to Chrysler happen to Chrysler, the whole notion, even if it's failed, even if they're only here for 5 years, the whole notion that Fiat's going to be selling in North America, awesome.
I think that, well, let's see what they come up with.
Awesome. The whole notion that there's a bunch of people that will buy them because they're probably going to be cheap and cute, and then you'll just see them on the side of the road with for sale signs on them with like just horrible resale value because no one can fix them.
Come on, we've got to step up in that department, guys. That, we can't repeat that whole
Fiat. Come on now. Fiat.
Well, you know,
Fiat gets away with it because all the European car companies are that way. They all make fucked up cars.
In conclusion today, I'm pleased to see that the Republicans are continuing to make fools of themselves with respect to the environment, you know, with
financial policy.
Financial policy. I mean, you know,
defending torture.
Obama reminds them that they did not support his stimulus votes at all. I mean, what's going to happen here is they're going to wind up being left behind in their one note strategy, which is to oppose everything he does. They cede all their power to the handful of moderate Republicans who actually will vote with Democrats.
Right. But you know, this could be that one
like
time.
Like Snow and people like that who actually have brains.
This could be the Republicans saying there's no need to win. They're not establishing a bulkhead, which is bad, but they might be conceding. They might just be letting this all go. The real battle will start in about January of next year.
We shall see. I don't know what they're doing. It really doesn't make sense to me because to me, you know, there is also the governing of the nation. There is also the running of the country. And I, you know, they've opposed everything that's been put forward in the last 100 days.
The Republicans benefit from that every time. They opposed 100% all of the Bill Clinton initiatives when he first became president, and they didn't pay a price for it. Of course, they had the graded assist of Bill Clinton having a way out of control first 100 days. It just turned off the nation.
Right.
But the flash to the Democrats who feel like they somehow have to vote for something they disagree with in the Iraq war, our tax cuts in 2000. I mean, our party could have sat on the sidelines and didn't cast one damn vote for any of those things and come out smelling like a rose. But instead you have these mucked up, our 2004 primary was fucked up by who voted and who didn't vote for the Iraq war.
Yeah.
And it almost was going to be an issue this year, except for they had just happened to brew the world's worst global economic downturn in 70 years. I just want to read one thing. We should get off the air, but there's one thing that is on Political Wire today or yesterday, which is Obama by the numbers, and it's from a site called PolitiFact, and it's just statistics. And PolitiFact says Obama has kept 27 campaign promises, broken 6, and compromised on 7. And NBC,
that's
not bad, really. NBC News says that because Obama is going to do a televised press conference to commemorate the end of his 100 days, that the only other modern presidents, I don't know how they define modern, who have conducted more press conferences.
Anybody after Kennedy.
Yeah, exactly. after their first 100 days are Harry. Oh, no, it goes before Kennedy. Oh, okay. Harry Truman and Bill Clinton. So it must be FDR. And since taking office, Obama has signed 13 bills into law and issued and signed 19 executive orders.
Well,
I think that we've seen a really, whether you hate it or not, a lot of things done in 100 days, almost like outside of the noise about the stimulus package, most of it just kind of happened.
It's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. And as you mentioned, just using the office of the president itself has been very deft. He's remarkable. I think
a whole bunch of capitalists get marched in. A whole bunch of credit card owners get marched in, and they leave dour.
But
I
once
if they
again,
got
this
the
comes
water.
Back to my statement, which is that you know, social responsibility has got to be brought back into business practices,
right.
Whether it's a philosophical issue or an ethical issue or an actual legal one,
right.
But I think the philosophy alone will change in the philosophy alone. People, the American people cannot just be seen as people to be pickpocketed because you start, I mean, these things that are happening with these huge class divides are not an accident. You talk about 250,000. I mean, honestly, that's not enough. That isn't a lot of money in right. modern terms. If you want to have a nice house and two cars and kids in school,
but it's enough to live on.
It's enough to live on very well, but you're not going to live like a king.
No, the way you might have a generation ago. School.
They might not even be able to go to private school. You'll have a house. You'll be able to feed them. You'll be able to have two cars, and yeah, the kids can probably go to private school with some help. But if you have three kids, maybe not. I don't know. And that's on $250,000 a year. So you're talking about a family with $40,000. Struggling to make a house payment and keep two small cars that are probably older and used and deal with their kids in public school and keep up with their education, keep them fed, keep them clothed, and they're being robbed because their interest rates go up willy-nilly up to even 30%.
On a credit card offer that came through the mail that they basically got without any – with some someone did a profile on them as a generic thing before they sent that stupid offer. But the whole game with half of those damn things was – to trap people into minimums and fees.
Exactly. Exactly. It isn't just, you know, the buyer that has to be aware. It's also the seller, and the seller needs to stop being so exploitative.
Oh, my God. We are in a socialist state. I'm joking.
Oh, no. Wait. Are we fascist?
We are fascists. I saw a I drove through the valley today, and I saw a socialist, you know, the Obama... Shepard Fairey.
Yes.
They did it, but they made him into the Joker from the last Batman and
cool.
said socialism underneath. Wheat pasted up on one of the power
nice.
Boxes. On
nice.
It. Yeah.
Scary.
It's kind of scary. California could be a red state at any moment in time.
No, please.
You just need to kill everyone in San Francisco and Los Angeles, and then it's like solid red.
That's kind of true. We always forget. This is a very conservative state.
It's Orange County. They don't call the Orange Curtain.
No one believes me when I tell them that when I leave here. I'm like, you don't understand. We've put two Republicans in the White House.
Which, by the way,
Nixon and Reagan. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Mm-hmm. We had a Republican governor for two terms. And then, by the way, we've had a lot of Republican governors. Yeah. We should venture. I would like to.
We have one now.
We should
a monster.
That's true. We should look up, by the way, the guys jumping in the race for governor of California. I would like to cover that this year. It's going
to
be pretty good.
We need to talk about that.
It's going to be pretty darn good.
Villaraigosa, run L.A. if you think you want to be the mayor.
I mean, Villaraigosa's thinking about it.
You know, he's thinking, I'm saying, but he needs to run L.A.
Gavin Jerry Newsom Brown.
Has the gay marriage thing hanging over his head, and that's going to be a problem. But he's got some viability. He's done a much better job in San Francisco than Villaraigosa's done here. Although I'll bet one's a hamlet compared to this place.
Right. When you look at it, the whole point of being governor of California is, this is not necessarily 100% true, but in this election, is either trying to become a senator afterwards or a national presidential candidate.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that Villaraigosa is trying to head for the White House. I think Gavin Newsom is either headed home after governor, because it's a term limited office. He's either headed home or he's trying to get into the Senate. Schwarzenegger wants the Senate.
Yeah.
He wants the Senate big time. And I'm really curious to see how that's going to
play. He's an interesting Republican.
You know,
I don't love him, but he's an interesting, he seems to be more free. He's a lot freer thinking than a lot of these more
he's
rigid.
Just super lucky that the rest of the world is in a pile of crap at the same time. We're in the same freaking mess that we were in under Gray Davis, except for Gray Davis had squandered a goddamn surplus on the energy crisis that he should have shown some leader. He should have pulled them into his office like Obama's doing. But the reality is that the stuff he said that wouldn't happen is happening on his watch. And the only reason why people aren't really up in arms is A, he's not up for re-election, and B, the whole world is this way. But outside of that,
I just had this sudden vision of like a desert filled with solar panels creating energy with absolutely no work.
Exactly.
Windmills and solar panels. That is my vision.
Mine too. All right,
desalination.
Well, all right. We already covered our weekly thing, which
and
is
having a $250,000 salary.
And peace in the Middle East.
And peace in the world.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So we both called him FDR this week.
I think I'm sticking to that.
And that would be it for our show.
See ya.
Thank you, everybody.